Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome back to the show. Tell Nate he's got a couple of text messages. Pay attention to the first one I sent.
I saw it.
Okay. Just make sure. I think Jake would concur. It's a star-studded Border Patrol on this Thursday, March 14, 2024, as I broadcast live from the Sports Radio 810 broadcast booth across from T-Mobile Center, right at the entrance of the Miller Lite Fan Fest, where day three of the Big 12 Men's Basketball Championship will take place. And Nate Buchady is back in studio with Jake Gutierrez. Nate will be headed down here right after the show to join me. But thank you to Buster Olney from ESPN for appearing on the show already. And now we have Mike DeCourcy, our wonderful college basketball insider, joining us. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am well, Stephen. How are you?
Oh, you know, Mike, I'm pretty good. I had a chance to sit down to really dig in and watch Mizzou against Georgia to see if they could pull off the unthinkable and win an SEC basketball game this year. And they had a 7-point lead, with about 3.5 minutes left. And my daughter said, Dad, they have a 7-point lead. There's only 3.5 minutes left. They might win. And then after she said that, Georgia went on a 12-0 run to finish the game and finish Mizzou's season 0-19 in the SEC. And we've laughed and giggled about it all year long. But, man, there's nothing funny about being 0-19 in conference play. And, look, Dennis Gates built up a lot of goodwill in his first year. But now going 0-19 combined with the fact that the AD that hired him is gone, and there's no AD right now, and who knows what the new AD will think or want to do. He'll be back next year, but it seems like all the goodwill he built up is out the door. I mean, just put a bow on it. What's your reaction to going winless throughout the entire SEC season?
Well, there's a couple of things that I would say about that. First of all, does this not teach us? Some of the things that I say over the years, I've said them for 40 years, and they don't seem to be getting through. But when people complain that gentle early schedules are useless and a waste of time, does this not finally teach us? And couple this result with the DePaul result last night, which was almost the same thing, although in DePaul's case they were playing a better team than Georgia. They both don't know how to win. They just don't. And that's, you know, I'm not saying that Missouri's non-conference didn't teach them that, but they forgot. So there's value to learning how to win and making it a habit. And Mizzou did not achieve that this year. I'm not saying that. But it does show that there is value to learning how to win, because quite clearly we had two teams that were capable of winning these games and in position to win these games and should have won these games and yet couldn't achieve it at all. And that says a lot about the value of learning how to win. And so when you look at somebody like Iowa State that played a really gentle non-conference schedule and now is being criticized for that, well, T.J. Otzelberger was bringing back a team that he didn't really know what to expect a lot from, and he looked at his league and said, they're going to be pretty good. I'll get plenty of tough games. And so they played the gentle non-conference schedule, and they learned how to win, and they keep winning. And so there is value to it. I'm not saying that, like, if you bring back five starters from a national championship team, you should be playing, you know, 300-level Division I opponents, because your guys will get bored. But if you've got six or seven new guys, or you're coming off a tough season, then you have to understand that team has to figure out how to win, not just how to get tougher, because lots of tough teams lose a lot of games. The second thing I will say is that one can look at that 0-19 and say that's decisive. That's what Vanderbilt did in, I believe it was 2019, after Bryce Drew had built up the program at Vanderbilt, had a really nice year in 2017, And then in 2019, he recruited Darius Garland and Simi Shitu and thought they were going to be terrific. And Darius Garland, and they were really good for the first three or four games. And then Darius Garland blew out his knee, and they went right down the tubes and lost every SEC game. And the AD that Vanderbilt hired figured he had a better idea, and he hired Jerry Stackhouse. And how's that gone since? Meanwhile, Bryce Drew's out in the desert winning conference championships with Grand Canyon, and Vanderbilt is nowhere. So you can't overreact. Like, what difference is 0-19 to 3-16? It just doesn't make, you know, it doesn't matter. It's bad, and there's no escaping that this was bad. But the way you escape it is you take the very solid recruiting class they put together, and you go out in the transfer portal and you use your charm and whatever else is available to you in today's recruiting. Whatever else usually matters more. And you go build a team that can go closer to 19-0 than 0-19. And that's how you do it. But if you react to this by saying, that's it, if you lose every game, you can never recover from it. That's a lot of what I got when I wrote in 2019 that the Bryce Drew firing was the most ridiculous firing in my career of covering college sports. And all the Vanderbilt supporters or the supporters of the firing said, you can't come back from 0-19. Well, look at Vandy now. They're gone from this year's SEC tournament. They were never supposed to stick around. Let's see, what did they finish? They did not finish 0-19. They finished a whopping 4-14 and now 4-15. So not much better.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is our guest. All right, before Nate gets into KU with you, we have to talk about K-State because they're making a push for the NCAA tournament. They got the win to close out the regular season against Iowa State. Boy, they were down 10 at halftime last night to Texas, and they come back and get that win. Now, tonight, they get Iowa State again. And so if they can pull this one off tonight, Mike DeCourcy, where would that put them as far as the NCAA tournament? And what do you think about this push right now by the Wildcats?
Well, I think it's really impressive, first of all, whether they get there or not. It's exceptionally impressive that they've been able to push as hard as they have. Their case is really difficult. Their NCAA tournament resume is one of those where you see ability and you see promise, but you just aren't sure about whether or not it's good enough. It certainly, if Iowa State were to be added, would be a difficult one to displace, to discard. I mean, at that point, you would have two over Iowa State. You'd have BYU and Baylor. Now, all of that's at home. KU's at home as well. You'd have two significant neutral court wins, three if you want to count bubble team Providence. And everything else would be transacted at home. And that's problematic for them because they also, of course, lost some games to teams that are punishing. The loss to SC, the loss to Oak State, the loss to Miami are all punishing losses in the scheme of things. So if they won today, they would be alive and still have the opportunity. Remember, if they win today, they're one game away from the final. And who out there other than maybe Houston do you say, if you've beaten Iowa State already, who out there do you say they have no shot against getting the automatic bid? So I think that, and I'm not sure that I would say that about Houston. I probably would, but I'm not sure of it. They only had one shot at him. It was on the road. So it's hard to say whether they'd be capable of pulling that off. But I think that, you know, when you're in this situation, when people say, what does this team need to do? The complicated answer is, well, there's all these other things that are happening around them that affect that. You could say they would definitely be in today's field, and then tomorrow, say, Dayton could lose, and that would open up that would steal one bit off the pile, and then Florida Atlantic could lose, and that would steal another bit off the pile. And Arizona could lose and open up the potential for another bid to come. And so they could make today's tournament, but not Sunday's, which is the one that really matters.
Cincinnati beat Kansas last night, another shorthanded, and now they get Baylor. What about Cincinnati?
I think they've got a longer way to go than K-State by a shot. I mean, a really significantly longer way to go. Their metrics are much better, but their resume is not nearly as good. So certainly they have, you know, they have the chance that everybody else has to win the automatic bid. But you're looking at a team right now that still is significantly underwater against the Quad One. They're 4-10 against Quad One, 3-1 against Quad Two, which gives you a combined record of 7-11. That's not screaming NCAA tournament. You throw in the two Quad Three losses, and that hurts. So then there's another non-field loss to Xavier, although it's Quad One. The committee knows that that's not a tournament team, and that hurts. They've lost the vast majority of their most difficult games. From what's in the league, outside the league, they lost to both Dayton and Xavier. So it's not really a strong case at this stage. I would say that their most likely entry into the field would be to win the conference tournament, which suggests to you how difficult it will be for them to get into the tournament.
All right, Mike. Now, Nate Ducati's been chomping at the bit. He wants several questions in a row about Kansas. I'm going to step aside. Nate Ducati, Mike DeCourcy, let's go.
All right, Mike. This deserves a lot of questions because this is something we haven't seen ever in the Bill Self era, which spans decades now. So let's just start, though, with since we're talking tournament. Last bracketology I saw had Kansas as a 4 seed. Despite the fact that the wheels have been coming off down the stretch, Bill Self says Kevin McCullough and they believe Hunter Dickinson should be ready to go by the tournament. You know this selection committee process as well as anybody. Does the selection committee take Bill Self's word for it? How do they evaluate the situation that Kansas is in and trying to judge who they are if those two guys play, and assuming they play or don't play? How does the selection committee, what's their decision-making process when they seed this Kansas team?
Well, it's a challenge because I have two examples. In 2000, when I was covering the Cincinnati Bearcats, Kenyon Martin was the national player of the year, the most dominant college basketball player of a significantly long period of time. Him and Glenn Robinson had probably had the single best seasons of the 90s. And that says a lot because Christian Laettner played in the 90s, Shaquille O'Neal played in the 90s. But those two seasons stood out above everything. And then he broke his leg in the conference tournament, and it was very quickly and reasonably asserted that he was not going to play. In the same year, Lauren Woods was injured at Arizona, did not play the final 4 games, I believe. Arizona went 2-2. It happened that Arizona's AD was on the selection committee, and they still got a 1 seed, even though Cincinnati got docked to a 2, and Cincinnati had a vastly better regular season than Arizona. So that honesty does not help in those circumstances. And you saw in 2010, Orenze Anuaku for Syracuse, Syracuse had a great year in 2010, and Orenze hurt his knee in the first game, the quarterfinals of the Big East tournament. I believe they were playing Georgetown. Hurts his knee. Syracuse looks at it and says, day to day, we'll let you know. And then he didn't play in the tournament, and they lost in the Sweet 16 to Butler. And for all we know, day to day meant day to day for like the next however many months. Who knew? But he didn't play, but they didn't dock on a single note. They were a 1 seed. They may have gotten shipped. I can't remember. I'd have to look at the bracket. I know they got shipped I think they played their game in Salt Lake. So they may have gotten bounced out of the region as a result of that Georgetown loss. But they still were a 1. So there's no value to being honest about this. I don't believe that this should be a factor. I don't believe that you should be graded on, okay, well, you don't have this guy anymore, so we don't think you're as good. I think that's garbage. I wrote it in 2000 when they did it in advance of them doing it to Kenyon Martin. because you had nothing to grade the Bearcats on. You had 35 minutes of basketball to grade it on. And that 35 minutes playing through the fog of understanding, you just lost your ticket to the national championship. But maybe not your ticket to the Final Four if you'd been given a fair seed and fair draw. So that I think that the committee even considers injuries at all in any way, shape, or form is one of the truly flawed elements of the process. It's trash. They shouldn't even think about it. The committee chair yesterday said that he knew that Indiana State was missing one of their starters when they had took two quad three losses, something like that. I think they were quad three. That shouldn't matter. Because you can do that with every team in America. Every team in America has got an excuse for every loss they have. Oh, you know, I overslept because, you know, I had a paper due. Whatever. It's just it shouldn't factor in. You win or you lose. So, you know, as far as what Kansas has done and how they'll be seeded, I mean, the fact that they got smoked twice, not necessarily their last two games, but the fact they got smoked twice in the way that they did is not encouraging, and I don't think they can continue to hold the top three seed that they had earned with a lot of the victories that they had posted. But I don't think it should go much lower than that. And if it does, it's a travesty because they beat UConn, number one seed, Houston, number one seed. They beat Tennessee.
Yep.
No, they beat Carolina. Right?
They beat Tennessee and Kentucky are two other good wins for them. Yeah.
They beat Tennessee. That's a number one seed, too. They beat three of the four teams on the one line. I mean, how do you overlook that? So I don't think it should be – like I said, the nature of the losses that they've gotten recently or not is going to be punitive. But the fact that they posted those victories, albeit two of them at home – they're still impressive victories, and nobody else out there has wins over each of three number one seeds. I mean, no one else does. So I would have a very hard time if they fell out of a protected seed category.
Okay, so the bigger question is, you know, what happened to Kansas and why? We know obviously the injuries to McCullough and Dickinson really derailed the season, but they had problems even before that. And I want to go a couple different directions with you on this. First of all, one of the things we talked about was, hey, Hunter Dickinson goes down. When they brought Hunter Dickinson in, they used to have a guy named Ernest Uday, who is now at TCU, who decided to leave and go find another place to play because his playing time was going to be limited. Maybe in the past, that's not as much of an option for guys. How much is that affecting a program like Kansas now that the landscape has changed a little bit?
Well, I think it affected them, but I think it's hard for them to complain about it when they won the 2022 championship largely on the backs of transfers. I mean, the efforts of transfers, a lot of their roster in 2022. I mean, obviously, the two biggest talents on that team were recruited players, Christian Brown and Ochai Agbaji. They were the two most important players. And David, who was the biggest player in that game, was a recruited player. But they don't win that game if they don't get the contributions off the bench that they did from transfers or several before. So I think it's hard to complain about that. I think you have to manage it. And you managed it by deciding that Hunter Dickinson was worth adding and Kevin McCullough before that was worth adding. I don't think that's the problem. I think that the problem is that they were unable to build offensive confidence for whatever reason among the players that went four to wherever your the end of your rotation stopped. Five to wherever the end of your rotation stopped. You will find one through four, although DeJuan Harris's reluctance to shoot threes continues to mystify, especially with what we saw last night. But you were fine. But beyond that, you couldn't build steady confidence. I mean, I saw Elmarco Jackson make, in the time, I watched the game from half on until it just got useless. But Elmarco Jackson made three or four really aggressive plays at the defensive end, rebounding. And then you get down on the offensive end, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with it. Johnny Furphy had that great stretch. He put him in the lineup, and he starts banging in threes and starts racking up double-figure games. And then all of a sudden it's gone. And last night, when you had KJ out there just absolutely tearing it up. And one, they didn't push that enough. And two, no one else stepped forward to take advantage of the space that was provided. I don't understand how basketball players' confidence can be that fragile. But it's like what happened was that they wound up with all the fragile confidence guys that UCLA didn't get. It's like that was the biggest problem, is that the guys that they have don't believe in their ability. And the ability is real. Like I said, you don't do the things El Marco did last night in the second half without being a capable basketball player. You don't do the things that Johnny Furphy did for a month and a half or a month or however long it lasted without being a really capable basketball player. But they didn't believe when there was that opportunity last night. No Hunter, no Kevin, lots of shots for me. As long as I take good ones, I'm going to do fine. That thought process was not out there except for Cajun.
Man, I'll tell you what, I actually even texted some of my buddies because when I was in the arena watching the warm-up or watching the introductions, when they announce the players and everybody's sitting on the players all sitting on the bench, the looks on the faces of the players who were going to start looked like a bunch of guys who didn't have any confidence. And I know it's dangerous to read body language, but I just saw their faces and I thought, man, that doesn't look encouraging. So I totally hear what you're saying there. Yeah. I wasn't looking, though, to gripe about the new situation or complain about it. What I'm trying to get at, let's just get to the bigger point, which is this crazy season. This is the worst season that Kansas has had in the Bill Self era. First time they've lost back-to-back games by 20 points or more since 1919. So is this a sign that things have changed or there are bigger problems going forward for Kansas? Is this because Bill Self is saying this is never going to happen again. Is it as simple as that? Bill Self's going to have him right back rolling next year, and this is just going to be looked back on as one of those crazy years where Kansas wasn't as good as they usually are.
Can I promise that it won't be like this next year? No, I can't. I can't guarantee that. But you've got the best building in college basketball, the best active coach in college basketball. Your bad season was, what did I say before? Beat three number one seeds. I would anticipate that the broader problems. Come on, no, Nate. I mean, no. They had a rough year. Now, one thing I've tried to say over the last couple years is that college fans have to be conditioned that this is going to happen sometimes now. Because you don't have the players tethered any longer. The ability to transfer without having to sit out. It allows those who either are unhappy or perceive a better opportunity elsewhere or perceive a better economic opportunity elsewhere or don't connect with the coach, whatever it might be, or don't like Lawrence, whatever it might be.
That's what I'm getting at, though, Mike. Like
But that doesn't mean there's a broader problem at KU. It just means that every now and then, in every program in America, you're going to have years where it doesn't work. And you're going to have to live through that. And you can decide as a fan, well, clearly Bill Self doesn't know what he's doing, which is the most absurd statement that I've ever made in my life.
Which I'm not making that statement.
No, I know you're not. But I'm saying that the fan can decide that. Or they can say, look, you're going to have down years sometimes now. That's the way college sports are going to be. Just like the Steelers aren't going to aren't going to have every year isn't going to be 1979. They're going to have tough years from time to time because the competition is balanced and the nature of free agency and all the rest of those things. And the other coach, as Chuck Tanner of the Pirates used to tell me, the other team's players get paid too. I mean, all these reasons, you're going to have some years at KU that aren't what one expects. But remember, this is like, look at Louisville's bad year, okay?
Right.
And then look at KU's bad year. Oh my, you're a four seed. How will the world continue to spin?
No.
Mike, thank you so much for drying his salty tears.
We
really appreciate it.
That's the whole point, Mike. That's why I'm asking these questions because Kansas fans, we have been living in a fantasy world since the day Bill Self was hired. They are great every year. They're contenders for the league every year. And I've tried to make that point as often as possible to KU fans that even the Blue Bloods miss out on the tournament sometimes. That's not even a thought ever with Kansas. And so that's the question I'm asking you is, because of the shifting landscape, could that be different going forward where every once in a while Kansas does find themselves on the bubble? Could you shudder the thought? Or just in a year like this, is it a sign that things are different in the landscape? I think you kind of answered that for me a little bit. Yeah, maybe things will be a little different.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not indicative of a broader problem at Kansas.
Gotcha.
It's not KU at all. As a matter of fact, like I said, I think the greatest statement of strength on the part of the operation, and it's obviously Bill is extraordinary. He's, like I said, he's the best active coach in college basketball, which makes you one of the greatest of all time. He's extraordinary, but it was great before that too, right? Because before that you had Roy, and before that you had Larry Brown. So it's been great for my entire career covering college basketball. Very little not great in there. Even the year that they weren't allowed to go in 89, they put a good group on the floor and won some big games. So I just think it's, you know, maybe what you have to understand and what you have to hope for to continue is that your down years are going to be this, and while Louisville's are this, and Carolina's is last year, and Duke, I'm still not sure about Duke because their bad year was the pandemic year, and gosh, who knows, right? But, you know, that's what you have to hope for, is that your down year is, oh, we beat Houston and we beat Tennessee and we got a 4 seed and we finished 6th in the league. I mean, in the most competitive league in the country, by the way. That's not a bad situation to be in.
Mike DeCourcy, thank you so much for your time and your counseling session. We appreciate it.
You feel better, Nate?
By the way, Mike, I sit here staring at 0-19, and this guy needs to be burped and put to bed, because he's a 4 seed in the tournament. So, the horror. Good God.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, Mike.
That just hit me when you said that. Thanks, man. Take care, Nate. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Mike DeCourcy.
Hey, we have expectations of Kansas. What do you want me to say?
just keep on going.
I am getting an angry email from a KU fan saying you got to point out that KU took all 3 of their scholarship losses now, and that's maybe part of the reason they don't have the depth as well. And so I want to make sure that I respond to that. That maybe that's part of it as well with the KU sanctions that they got. So there you go. Thank you, Dan.
Makes it all better.
I was yelling at my television last night as Fran Fischilla was scolding Bill Self. He's got to recruit better. It's like, shut up, Fran.
Wow.
Like, shut the hell up.
Wow. You were yelling at your TV?
I was. I mean, I was almost took everything not to throw my remote.
Don't throw your remote, Jake.
I didn't.
Or do.
Because then I remember the game's over and you need people to talk about you.
Right. Hey, I do want to mention, again, you've heard me talking about one of our fine new partners here on the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. And let me tell you, you are probably going to want to call them today or sometime soon. WeatherTech Renovations, my good friends at WeatherTech Renovations, let me tell you something. There were storms all over the place last night. Do you guys see pictures of the size of the hail?
Oh, yeah. Man.
Tennis ball size.
Yeah, a buddy of mine showed me a picture of some of his house. Unbelievable.
There was actually the big Mahomes ball size.
No,
hail,
that doesn't exist.
It's gigantic. I mean, yeah. Right through a window. So it could happen. But let me tell you.
I can clear for a week.
Good balls.
Honestly, I saw people were sending in pictures of their windshields being cracked. And hail going through, it's dangerous, obviously, too. But, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of people out there that suffer damage to their roof because of the hail all over town. And so what you need to do is you need to call a well-known local trusted roofing company to come and do a free inspection, and that's WeatherTech Renovations. They have an experienced professional team, including people who work with insurance companies, and more importantly, they'll give you a free inspection. If you call them, that's what you need, peace of mind. If you had that size of hail, there's probably damage, all right? So call them, 816-988-8957. 816-988-8957. Tell them Stephen St. John told you to call. They might hang up the first time and then call back and say, hey, Stephen told me to call, and then you'll get through. 816-988-8957. No, all kidding aside, great people that you can trust at WeatherTech Renovations. I wouldn't steer you wrong. And if you're worried now that you have hail damage, that is what you need to do, because one quick call and you can get a free inspection. They can protect your home or your business. 816-988-8957. Get a free inspection to see if you have any hail damage on your roof. And you can also check them out online at WTRenovations.com. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810. WHB, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Drew Tranquil turned into a breaking news reporter during his press conference there, because when he was talking with the media and he mentioned that earlier when he was coming in to sign contracts with Deion Bush and Mike Pinnell, it had not been made known that Mike Pinnell was re-signing with the Chiefs. And so he actually, nice job by Drew Tranquil of breaking that news. And then we find out after his Zoom press conference that indeed Mike Pinnell did re-sign with the Chiefs. So that's a wonderful re-signing of a guy that played a tremendous role on the defense in the postseason and was just terrific in the Super Bowl. The beast, Mike Pinnell, comes back for another year with the Kansas City Chiefs. And Drew Tranquil did not stop there. He was at it. He was asked during the press conference if he has been recruiting any other free agents, and he said he really hadn't. He'd been focused on his role or in his situation as a free agent. But then last night,
wow,
he Drew Tranquil tweets out, "What's up at DaReal Mike Dub? See red and think Super Bowls." Heart emoji. Trophy emoji, and that was to Mike Williams, the Chargers wide receiver who was released. And then after that, he tweets, "While we're at it, what's up at Primetime Jet? See red and think Super Bowls." Red heart emoji, trophy emoji, and of course, Primetime Jet is Hollywood Brown.
Damn! Let's go, Drew.
Screw you guys.
Yeah.
Drew Tranquil wants him too.
That's
so,
fine.
There you go.
We'll take him. Not my money.
Bite me, Jake. How about
not
that?
My money. I'll take him.
Yeah. Sure. That's right.
Man, he's out here recruiting for us. Let's go.
That's right.
That's great.
That's right. You will take him. So
I'd rather have Mike Williams, probably.
Hell, why not take both?
Right.
I mean, take it all.
Mike Williams coming off the ACL. I don't know. I feel like they need Hollywood Brown speed. Again, I'm not going to say no to either one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a preference.
You have a need for speed, Stephen.
Right.
Meanwhile, Calvin Ridley signs a monster deal with the Titans.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, right, exactly. No thanks.
Hey, we do not want to sign a younger, better receiver in A.J. Brown.
That.
But let's get, let's draft his replacement, who is a bust in Treylon Burks. And then now we'll give a whole bunch of money to an older, not as good receiver as A.J. Brown, Calvin Ridley.
I feel like Mike Vrabel was cursing yesterday at Twitter.
There's a guy that probably wanted to throw his remote control.
Yes.
When he was watching NFL Network and saw that. We will be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Something else was very interesting to watch yesterday. The Ballad of Pretty Ricky had many NFL insiders going crazy because there was this formerly obscure X account, Twitter account, Pretty Ricky 213, who started tweeting out a bunch of free agent news like an hour before it was happening, right? And he was right about a lot of stuff. I mean, and very accurate and specific about a lot of stuff. Before anyone else got the big surprise of, because, you know, for a while there, was Calvin Ridley was supposedly deciding between the Patriots and returning to the Jags. About an hour or so before it happened, he starts tweeting that there's a mystery division rival of the Jags that's made this huge offer of 90 plus million, and then it happened. And it wasn't just that. He had, I think he broke like five or six stories in a row, and he was right pretty much all day long. And so then people started to pay attention to what he was tweeting. And do you know what he was tweeting for most of the day? One of the things he was tweeting about the Chiefs?
What's that?
Hollywood Brown to the Chiefs.
Oh, boy.
And so it didn't happen during the day. And so then he said, hearing that Hollywood Brown to the Chiefs should happen after the Chiefs trade L'Jarius Sneed. And then his Twitter account crashed all of a sudden.
Mm.
And people started freaking out and saying, oh, that must have been a GM or an agent or someone that working in the NFL office that had a burner account, and he just got found out and had to delete his account. But I was already following him. But then his account came back, and it was locked, but I was already following him. And said, folks, the account blew up so much, the account was crashed. We'll be back shortly. The People's Insider will be back. They're trying to shut down Ricky. I won't let them. I've paid for Premium Plus. I will not go down without a fight. It's a bit... Were either of you guys paying attention to this?
No.
Not see it.
No.
It was wild, man.
Now that you say that, I do remember people retweeting an account that I wasn't checking it out, but like people retweet stuff, and I didn't know that that's what the account was.
He hit on like, and there's some funny stuff there too, but he hit on like four or five things in a row. And then all of a sudden, everyone started to pay attention. And then they apparently tried, somebody or something tried to shut his account down.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think we're doing a little Hollywood swinging maybe in Kansas City, it sounds like.
See, I mean, who knows? But again, he was nailing stuff left and right. And so then other people started reaching, like, you know, this guy's been right so far, so... we'll see. But it was the Ballad of Pretty Ricky all day yesterday. Back into this on WHB.